Welcome to Shifting Mindsets for Better Health, a podcast series produced by our partners at Central Michigan University with a grant from the Children's Foundation. COVID-19 has impacted the lives of millions. Sharing information among healthcare professionals is going to be key to saving lives and improving outcomes. This podcast series brings together healthcare professionals across disciplines to share insight into the far-reaching effects this pandemic has on children, caretakers, and medical care providers.
A lot of the care that we've had to provide has had to be shifted to phone calls and telemedicine.
I think we're at the point now in research where we don't know a lot yet about how to compare virtual interactions compared to the typical face-to-face interactions that children and families would have.
I was literally in my patient's home, waking her up in the morning for the appointment.
This episode is telemedicine, what works and what does not. In the early months of the pandemic, doctors and healthcare providers scrambled to shift their focus to provide adequate care at a distance. This episode will focus on how healthcare providers navigated the shift to virtual patient interaction forced by the pandemic. Dr. Scott Grant is a general pediatrician and pediatric hospitalist at Children's Hospital of Michigan and an assistant professor of pediatrics at CMU's College of Medicine. Dr. Grant explains the shift in medical care due to the COVID-19 pandemic.
The way that we have treated patients during the COVID pandemic has changed in a couple of key ways. A lot of the care that we've had to provide has had to be shifted to phone calls and telemedicine interfaces. We're doing a lot more of our visits through telemedicine platforms where we're doing video chats with families to try to prevent them from having to leave their home, especially when the stay home, stay safe orders were in place and were sort of new. Everyone was sort of hesitant to leave their homes, understandably. And so a lot of the care that we were providing was shifting to being done through telemedicine and phone calls to try to make sure that families had the resources and the medications that they needed to manage their children's medical care at home, to continue to support developmental progression in our children, and make sure that kids weren't losing milestones during this pandemic. And so working through a lot of that took some work over time to figure out how exactly we could provide that to our patients in a meaningful way, in a way that our patients could access reliably, which can be kind of a challenge depending on what resources families have here in our community.
Dr. Abhishek Bala is a child adolescent psychiatry fellow at CMU's College of Medicine and has an MD and a master's degree in public health. Dr. Bala shares his experiences working with kids during the pandemic.
I work with kids, adolescents. The first ever interaction I had was in March, where I was literally transported through Doxy, which is the online platform that we use for telemedicine, into our patients' homes. It's a completely new experience for us, right? And the first ever interaction I had was with this teenage girl who was still sleeping, who was in bed. Mom picked up the phone and said, "Oh, I forgot about the appointment. She's still sleeping. Hold on, I'm going to go wake her up." She wouldn't wake up. And mom had to literally take her phone and put it close to her face and say, "Look, your doctor's on the phone." And I'm there like, "Hey, can you wake up for me? It's time for the appointment." So I was literally in my patient's home, waking her up in the morning for the appointment, which was a completely new experience. I got to see all the paintings on their walls, the kind of setup that they have and everything, which is interesting, right? Because it gives a whole new perspective for us as clinicians. You have teenagers where it might be a little easier for them to interact with people because they do it on a day-to-day basis with their friends. But even then, right, just seeing an adult ask them very intimate questions over the computer can be really awkward for them. It's really hard to communicate some of those finer intonations in your voice or convey that sense of empathy over the phone or even over the camera, even though it's great clarity and everything. That idea of face-to-face interaction really gives us a better therapeutic alliance in my experience. That I can really see with teenagers. I have to go the extra mile to really engage them on their personal interests and really try and engage them in order to build that rapport. With younger kids, it's hard talking to younger kids on the phone. We all know that, right? You try talking to a six-year-old on the phone and they're watching TV and you're just trying to tell them to, trying to get them to say hi to you on the phone. And the parent on the side is just like, say hi to your doctor, say hi to your doctor. It's like over and over again. And they eventually say hi, but then they're back to watching Paw Patrol or whatever. And it's a huge barrier. It's not the easiest to do that over the phone or the camera, just because when they're in our office, I'm sitting down and I'm playing Jenga, I'm playing five in a row, I'm playing all these things with them to really try and engage them in conversation and try to get to the core symptoms. And not having access to that, I've had to innovate a little bit. I've had to change the background of my screen on Zoom to their favorite cartoon character and, you know, ask them, what are your favorites about this cartoon character? Look, he's right behind me, and really try to get them to loosen up and open up about some of their symptoms. So it's been very challenging, and we're really excited to get back. And even on a personal level, beyond that, I think I really enjoy those face-to-face interactions, really enjoy joking around with my patients and the families, or engaging with them on a more personal level. And that's something that is an obstacle, I think, through telemedicine. It's the best we have right now, and we understand that it's the need of the hour, really to ensure the safety of our patients, but we really hope to get back to normalcy soon, just so I can play Jenga with my six-year-olds and beat them. And, you know, asking kids about their mood or about their ability to focus or concentrate or why they had a tantrum 2 days ago when they didn't want to go to bed. Try doing that on the phone and asking them those questions. And they're just like, I don't know. Or they just stay silent because they think they're in trouble. If they're in person, you're able to really talk to them and ask them about, oh, you know, do you ever get angry? What happens when you get angry? And then what happens when you get sad? Did that happen like maybe a couple of days ago? And when you're doing that over play, for example, kids really tend to open up. When you have puppets with you, for example, and you're holding those puppets and you're asking them these questions, they're able to engage much more freely. But having a guy with sometimes where I'm with my attending and we're both wearing masks and you have a four-year-old in front of the camera looking at two adults wearing masks and asking them questions, it can be pretty scary. So with parents, we really try to communicate that. We try to tell them it's normal. We might have to do a few visits until we warm up and establish some alliance with your child, but we won't give up. We'll keep doing that. And now we have the flexibility of trying to meet some of them in person in the clinic. So I have a two-year-old that I'm doing that with, where we meet in the clinic and we play and talk to the parent and things like that. So that was impossible over the phone. There's no way I was talking to a two-year-old on the phone. So yeah, I mean, we try our best to really try to engage them, but yep, it's definitely a challenge.
Dr. Kai Anderson is a psychiatrist and director of psychotherapy training at CMU's College of Medicine. Dr. Anderson explains the importance of using telemedicine to connect with patients when face-to-face meetings are not available.
Working with children through telehealth services can be especially challenging. I found that it's very difficult to engage them sometimes during the audio sessions, particularly the young children, because they don't see you and they really like the visual as they're talking to their providers. So I try and encourage them to use the video sessions, if at all possible, to improve the engagement with their provider. In addition, some of the patients don't have the resources available to connect with us through telehealth, so that can also be very challenging and create disruption in trying to hear the patient or understand what the patient or the provider is saying. So I think it's important that we make these resources available to patients and focus on having video sessions, which are much more comfortable, show more interaction than the audio sessions. It's better than nothing, though. So if they don't have anything, it's better to have the audio sessions than not to have any services at all. So it's very important that, again, we foster those connections and we foster those activities that can promote a sense of well-being and competence to help bolster them against the effects of the pandemic. What we can be doing during this pandemic that's really important for our patients and for ourselves, ask those hard questions. If you see someone that you think is really struggling with someone, it's okay to ask them about that. Don't assume because they're silent that they're not suffering. Ask those difficult questions and offer to provide help. Talk about things that you may not have talked about before about whether they have enough food to eat, whether they feel racially marginalized, whether they feel that they're not able to learn because they don't have the resources at home because there's no parent there to help them navigate the online schooling. Ask those personal questions you may not have asked before regarding their day-to-day living. Because, again, if you're isolated and there's no one there to help you, to help guide you, you're going to feel more demoralized, more hopeless, more helpless. Having that contact, whether it's the phone contact, whether it's the video, those all promote sense of well-being and connecting with each other. So whatever we can do in any form will help us to survive this and to thrive.
Dr. Jessica Bowles is a certified child life specialist and team lead at Monroe Carroll Jr.'s Children's Hospital at Vanderbilt in Nashville, Tennessee. She is also an adjunct professor in psychology and human development at Vanderbilt University. Dr. Bowles considers what we know about telemedicine during this pandemic and what we will be able to research about the use of telemedicine thrust upon us by COVID-19.
I think we're at the point now in research where we don't know a lot yet about how to compare virtual interactions compared to the typical face-to-face interactions that children and families would have. I know that there's a lot of colleagues of mine at Vanderbilt that are working on that. And I know, especially with younger children, that's of interest too, because so much of being able to communicate virtually requires an understanding of the self in relationship to others. And technology or, you know, virtual interactions can kind of complicate that. But I know Georgine Trosseth, for example, at Vanderbilt, she works with infants and toddlers and kind of how they use Skype to shape their search behaviors. So it's kind of how do you take a virtual interaction and internalize that and then cognitively learn from it and express it. So what we're seeing is that younger children have the capacity to do these things. But I'm curious if in the next 5 years, as children have grown up sort of in this pandemic and with this shift to more virtual communication, what the impacts of that will actually be. I think that there can be some really great benefits to that. And you can definitely open up doors and, you know, help people communicate that wouldn't have been able to otherwise. But then I also wonder, too, about the skills that it takes to communicate virtually versus the skills that it takes to communicate in person, and whether we will see children kind of compensate for those skills or if we'll see sort of a regression. But we definitely have to focus in on that connection even more, because moms and dads maybe can't be present at the hospital, or grandma is also sick and in the hospital with COVID, or grandpa who is in the nursing home, who's normally someone you visit every Sunday, you can't visit him anymore. And it's hard for kids to understand that. So there's lots of different pieces that we're kind of picking up to help families, because that's a lot to explain to a child. Not only are they potentially in the hospital and dealing with their own illness or injury, but then to know that there's global concern about this virus that so much is still unknown about, it's really important for us to be helping families find the words to explain those things to their children and find the tools to keep that same family proximity, whether it's virtual instead of actually in person, so that that connection, that relationship, that intimacy that's so important for emotional support across that family remains intact. People don't realize the impact of just the exposure that our children are having to the media. It's not just the news. It's, you know, the commercials they see on TV. It's the conversations they're having with their friends on Twitter. It's everywhere. It's things that they're hearing. And that's a lot of information for us to take in as adults, let alone kids. So it makes sense then that our kids are thinking about COVID. They're thinking about what could happen to them, what could happen to their family. So it's almost as if we have a higher responsibility as adults, more than normal, to kind of break down those barriers that preclude communication between ourselves and our kids, to give them that outlet to get the information that they need and to ask the questions that they have and to share the feelings that they have and to see the same from us in return. So I think that in healthcare, another important thing that we can be doing is not just treating the kids and families that come through the door, but giving them time and space to think on and reflect on and adjust to the change that any illness or injury means for their lives, especially in the context of a pandemic that we still don't know so much about. Yeah, and it gets complicated from a research methodology standpoint to study these virtual interactions and kind of the impact of that, because we're also limited in how we can interact with our research participants. So, You know, typically you would have someone come into a lab, like maybe a parent and child, and you would do some screening tools with them or some assessments, and then do some sort of virtual intervention and observe and collect data on that. But most of us are still operating not actually in our actual offices or research centers. And even if we were, we're not able to have people come on site to participate in those studies. So it kind of becomes a double layer of virtual study. You have to study virtual interventions in a virtual format, which can be very interesting, but then it's also hard to know exactly what you're looking at.
Telemedicine is a good tool to use when healthcare providers and patients have difficulty meeting face-to-face. But is it a viable substitute for meeting in person? The COVID-19 pandemic made it essential to meet virtually to keep healthcare communication flowing. However, we are still learning how to use telemedicine technologies effectively for healthcare. One of the biggest hindrances to effective telemedicine is the digital divide in broadband internet access. Some places have great access to the internet, while others have very limited or no access. The Federal Communication Commission, or FCC, is examining these issues and could use your help. Download the FCC Speed Test app on your smartphone and test internet speeds wherever you go. The more people who do this across the country, the more data the FCC will collect on a common platform about the discrepancies in internet speeds. This will help the FCC determine where the gaps in internet access are and develop a plan to correct them. Thank you to Dr. Scott Grant, Kai Anderson, Abhishek Bala, and Jessica Bowles for providing their expertise in telemedicine, what works and what does not. To find out about our other podcasts, go to med.cmich.edu/shiftingmindsets. The Shifting Mindsets for Better Health podcast series is a production of the College of the Arts and Media, the College of Medicine, and the Interdisciplinary Center for Community Health and Wellness at Central Michigan University. Executive producer and host is Dr. Heather Polinsky. Interview recording and editing by Mr. Michael Potter. Produced by Drs. Judy Blavia, Allison Arnold, and John Lowry. Funded by a grant from the Children's Foundation